DJ Flywave Live, courtesy of racesontheweb.com. Here is your host, TJ Buchenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you live here from the Engine Bro Studios, just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Happy holidays to everybody out there. And if it's holiday time, it's just about Rumble time, which means it's time for our annual talk with Rumble Series promoter Tony Barhorst. And Tony, it's hard to believe that, you know, in the late 90s, when you revived this, we'd be sitting here today and see this event evolve into quite the spectacular 2 days of racing it's become.
It certainly has evolved, you know, from the start in 1998. Jack Calabrese and I were looking around for 2 years, you know, for a place to have the event, and we had heard where there was a monster truck show and maybe some other karting event that was held at the Coliseum Expo Center, which is a larger floor next to the Coliseum. And anyways, we checked it out. Jim Hettinger was along on that and scoped it out and started from there in 1998 and moved forward. It was great working with Jack, and since then we've worked with USAC and been Rumble Series racing and independent. So it's evolved around, and in racing, what goes around comes around, you know. So, you know, it's really something that's true. You know, you never know what's going to happen, you know. Somebody that maybe you had a falling out with, or, you know, you get to work with in the future. So, you know, that's just the way racing is in every division.
And what's neat about the Rumble Series, and one thing that I've noticed since it's evolved from the beginning, is now when you look at it, with the inclusion of the quarter midget and some of the other karting classes, you're highlighting race car drivers from, like, the youngest to the oldest all in one night. And there's no other event I've ever been to that has such a range of age of competitors.
Right. It's a great range of ages. And in fact, the quarter midget drivers, we're noticing they're the hot midget car drivers right now. Guys that have run indoors with us, there's Justin Peck, owner Steve Clay out of Michigan there. And this kid is really good. Austin Prock, you know, he's an up-and-comer. He won races with us in the quarter midgets. And now he's been running with the Stars Series of Grundy County and been winning races there. And he's been working on the crew for Tony Stewart Racing, too. And it's been pretty interesting. That kid, you know, is a wizard, too, on the mechanics. And Tony works with him, and it's you know, a lot of fun to see these guys coming through the ranks. Cooper Klaus, you know, 15 years old, and in a midget after running a quarter midgets. And the guy is really sharp and a good driver. And so these are the guys to look out for. And that's what Tony Stewart talks about when he sees, you know, these young guys coming up. You know, we had an interview with Tony that's on jackslash.com, and he describes, you know, driving a munchkin indoors and what it's like to have been a participant through the years with us at Fort Wayne. So we have all ranges and quite a few different styles of midget cars with engines and chassis, about 19 or 20 different engine and chassis combos. So there's a lot of variety here.
And it's kind of what I jokingly, you know, friends and stuff, we call it our winter racing reunion, because that's, you don't see a lot of your racing friends if you didn't get the PRI or whatnot through for probably, if you live in this area, for a couple of months, and then you all head to Fort Wayne and just kind of get together and watch racing for 2 days.
Right. It's racing's holiday season party, and we have a good time during the day at the races, but people like to come out and you know, be in the pits, and, you know, then when it's all over with, we got racer rate hotels on RumbleSeries.com, and, you know, we have fun around Fort Wayne, has a lot of good nightlife, or, you know, the hotel swimming pool indoors, and so it's like a winter getaway, and that's what it's all about, having fun.
And it is a really fun event. And one of the highlights of the event has been Tony Stewart's participation ever since his mysterious appearance that first time, which I still think is one of the single best driving performances I've ever seen anywhere. And but this year, Tony is going to be involved in a little different role because of his recovery from his leg injury.
Right. Tony talked about that situation where he borrowed a John Heidenreich. Well, he was at the races, first of all, and I didn't know this until I heard this interview, that he had been up there with two or three friends with quarter midgets. Now, I'm going to ask him what quarter midget guys did you come up with in 1999? And, you know, it'll be interesting to see who that is. Anyways, he was around, and, you know, we had trouble with the track that year, and the track got oiled down, and really I was didn't have rosin, pretty new. It was just a year into the event. We had 1 year in the second year, so we didn't have rosin. Didn't have that. Searched around, hard to find that, you know, in a drop of a hat. So anyways, we had oil over the track, and then it got spread in, and we were wiping it up. And anyways, after a while, we were dragging tires and trying everything. I never forget this. Tony Stewart, you know, with his Shell when he first came in the Busch Series, had Shell as a sponsor. He was wearing that driver's suit, and he was standing on the tire, trying to, you know, get some traction, you know, putting weight on that tire as we drug it around. I just couldn't believe that, you know, that he was flying around on this tire, you know, like Joe Gibbs would have saw that, you know, he would have had a conniption. But anyways, we got the track back in shape. We thought we lost it, got it back in shape. Tony started 17th, and, I mean, you saw it, and you haven't forgotten it, and anybody that saw it went from 17th up to the front, and didn't really make hard contact with anyone, and just put on a driving clinic. And a couple veterans in the crowd even had brought tears to their eyes, you know, such an exhibition. Anyways, it's an interesting thing. I wish we had that on videotape. Maybe somebody has it. That would be fantastic to have that back.
It's still, like I said, he didn't win, but those 30 or 40 laps he did run were probably the best maybe I've ever seen anybody do. Especially there at Fort Wayne. And it's good to see that Tony is still going to be a part of this year's event, even though he won't be competing.
That's right. And he has Lou Ciccone going to drive for him. And Tony's going to be meeting fans. We had this maybe over 10 years ago where Calabrese and I had talked Tony into signing autographs. And it took a while, but he went out and we signed autographs. And, you know, it's been over 10 years since he has done that, you know, during the races. Usually he signs after the races, so fans that have enough patience to wait after the races. Tony, I've seen him sign every time almost until the line's gone. And so, you know, when it's time to race, that's like his job, and he's focused in on that. And he'll be focused in after he'll sign autographs for free at our event December 27th and 28th. We'll have a two-hour time period where he'll sign, and then once his car's out on the track, he's going to want to be with Lou Ciccone, who's going to be his driver this year. So we're still going to have fun with Tony and do some things, talk to the media. And, well, we've been talking to the media and really meeting the fans, you know, come race days.
And another thing different for this year, the 600s have become a big part of the event. And this year you're featuring multiple 600 classes. And I know this is something that's been in the works for a couple of years, but you're going to have some going back to kind of the roots where it's going to be a class where it's going to be dirt-only type cars and then some more specialized cars as well.
Yes, in the 600s, it's been surprising. We started out in the early 2000s with having the cars from Logansport, Miami County, Peru, Indiana area, and most of those cars came right off of the dirt. Then Atlantic City started running 600s indoors with the TQs. It's hard to believe we started getting 6 or 8 teams from the East Coast coming over to run the 600s with us. And those cars started getting more specialized. We had just basic rules and really enough that would, you know, really not even fit on a paragraph, so it was really truly outlaw. So they started coming in with lay-down seats and sometimes independent suspension, and the cars got really asphalt and specialty built. This happens in all forms of racing. And then, you know, it just is a goal to go fast, you know, and sometimes money talks and, you know, starts buying technology. But anyways, we wanted to return it and have the dirt cars so they would have a shot and have their own division. So we have a dirt rules only class. Once again, the rules are on rumbleseries.com on the driver info. And, you know, it's got a ride height and certain tires from Hoosier or American Racer and no independent suspension, straight front axle. And it wants to keep them, we want to keep them to dirt rules where guys can take them off a track at Logansport or Jackson Michigan or wherever outdoors and bring it to us and run with us and then go back outdoors, you know, so next season around Indiana and Michigan. So we think that's a good way to go. So we're having the best of both worlds with both of those divisions now.
How's reaction been to the new dirt class so far?
Well, really, I know we start 16 in the feature. We're going to tend to split the classes, you know, but it looks good on both ends, and it's going to be a boon, really. Instead of having 29 or 39 cars going for 16 spots, it looks like we'll have about 20 cars going for those 16, so there's a benefit there, and the racing's going to be more interesting. And now, you know, like we're getting some go-kart drivers that they see where they can, like, build a dirt car, and rather than a car that's only good once a year or indoors, they can build a car that they can have fun with and run outdoors too. So, you know, it's a good thing to do that, to bring the quarter midget drivers and the go-kart guys along if they want to move up.
And, you know, when you're bringing a whole racetrack indoors, this is a very different venture than, let's say, renting an outdoor racetrack, which you've done before and such. When do you start setting up the rumble, and what in the world do you guys put on the floor to actually make the rubber stick?
Okay, we're going to start December 23rd and get the track, the walls moved in, a fence put up, and cables installed, barriers in the infield, and safety barriers for go-karts and quarter midgets to where if they, you know, get in the concrete or something, you know, so they're protected with a soft wall situation. And we kind of watch that every year, you know, in safety, you got to watch for different situations that can come up. And so we do that on the 23rd, you know, and then it's Christmas Eve, and we're ready to take a break, but I got to be thinking about it during the holiday, and then Christmas night, got to start thinking about heading over to Fort Wayne. You get over there so we can load the cars in, and do that on the 26th, and then the 27th and 28th, we have racing with a full card of racing for the divisions, carts, quarter midgets, 600s, and midgets, both days, full features and that, both days.
And how long does the teardown take? Once the last checkered flag falls on Saturday, how long does it take to move everything out?
Well, you asked about what goes on the floor. Well, then on practice day on the 26th, we'll spray down just like a fine mist, or not even really a mist, and it's not saturated, but, you know, Mountain Dew syrup that's really sticky and adhesive, and then we start running the 600s and then the midgets out there, and it starts laying down rubber. And as we, you know, move along and practice in the race days, as the rubber moves out and it's a wide surface that turns black and really tacky and will almost pull your shoes off in certain spots. It gets really tacky. And so that gives the drivers, the cars, a grip. And we got substantial grip and enables two or three wide racing at times. And so racing is, you know, it's on a small track, but, you know, it's side by side and wheel to wheel, and they're pretty physical for these drivers, you know, to be out there constantly in traffic and no power steering in some cases. And so it's a lot of fun. So that's how we set the track up. And then the teardown, really, it's all about, you know, getting the forklifts back out. And, well, we pull the fence down and then start hauling the barriers with forklifts out to one side of the building. And then, you know, we got to be careful so we don't let all the heat out of the building. So we, like, got two double doors where we shut the doors. And, you know, there's a compartment where, a little room where we stack them. And then the door can be shut so the cold doesn't come in. And then they move them outside again. And then they sit out by the Coliseum for the year and then wait till next year.
And one thing I thought is interesting during our past discussions is how you get that rubber off the floor. And I was surprised to find it was just basically hot water and a little bit of elbow grease.
Right. One of the reasons this thing is sometimes, you know, the ticket prices are reasonable, but they got to be up there like with an event comparable to USAC or World of Outlaws, right? Not quite as expensive as the World of Outlaws. But because we have, I'll just say, you know, very seldom say this, but it's $5,000 to clean it up. And we have the Coliseum crew who, they're experts because they know about indoor racing since the days of the Coliseum when USAC raced from 1954 with their first race till 89. And so it's, you got to have a facility, man. And Brian Christie at the Memorial Coliseum is a guy that has seen it all with this indoor racing. And they got it down to a science where specialized solvents that got an orange smell to it, takes it off. Well, you soak it and marinate that rubber in that, and then you got a crew with scrapers that go around and scrape it. You got some mobilized floor scrubbers and like power trowel type scrubbers, and that's what gets that rubber off there. And then it's a convention center floor, so it's a nice floor that they feature all kinds of events on.
And a couple days later, you'll never even know there's a race in there. It's amazing.
No, they got a New Year's Eve coming up, so got to get going again with the next thing coming in.
And Tony, are advance tickets available for any fans that are interested in getting their stuff ahead of time?
Yeah, you can go to rumbleseries.com or give me a call at 317-418-3216. And we avoid a service charges by doing that. You can email me and we can get together and either send you tickets or have them held at the door. Or, you know, you can come in, and if you want to buy a pit pass, those are $30 for one day and $55 for two, and you can wait till the day of the event to get those because you got to sign in for those. So we do have some VIP meet and greet suite tickets where we have a room where people can hang out in, and it's up there near where TJ would be in the press box, not too far away. And we have like a 48 seats total each night where they have a room where they can have food and catering, tailgate style food and pop and snacks throughout the night. And Tony's going to stop in for 20 minutes to a half an hour. And those prices are on rumbleseries.com on the ticket page. So you can check that out. And but people, if they, it's going to be kind of tough, but you know, for 2 hours, Tony's going to sign autographs for the fans. It's tough to get everybody an autograph, but it's worked out. You've seen the autograph sections in the past where it's pretty orderly and that. And so Tony will meet fans and for 2 hours each night. And so that's going to be a lot of fun to do that. And, you know, like I said, some races, Tony, usually if you want to get his autograph, you can go in after the races are over, and he usually signs. So he's a good guy to work with.
And it's great to have him part of another Rumble series event. Well, Tony, I want to personally thank you for reviving and keeping this event going. I know it can't be easy because, I mean, it's a challenge every year, and you guys have met that challenge every year and continue to get better. And it's awesome that it's been able to go this long, and hope for many years to come as well.
Right. We just keep hammering away at it, try to make some improvements every year. So we appreciate TJSlideways.com being there from the start with the forum and website and all the information that you provide for racing throughout the year.
Well, thanks, Tony. I look forward to the Rumble series. And, man, I mean, it's a holiday tradition, and I can't wait to take part in it.
It's going to be fun. So Lou Ciccone will be there. And one short story before, the reason Tony has Lou Ciccone in there is, like, Lou one time let Tony borrow his car when Tony was a kid coming up in the open wheel ranks. It was on the East Coast or in Florida or someplace, and Lou let him stay there. They, you know, didn't have that much money. Lou let him stay at the place, and I think he might even have a ride for Tony, and Tony hasn't forgotten that. And so that's the nice thing. Tony hasn't forgotten where his roots are, and he has fun doing it, so that's what it's all about for everybody here, having fun with it.
And it'll be another fun weekend at the Rumble event. So, Tony, best of luck coming up in a couple weeks, and hopefully, like I said, it's another successful Rumble night.
All right, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's to everybody there.
All right, Tony Barhorse from TheRumbleSeries.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Dave Ely from DMI and Sprint Car Racer out of Central Pennsylvania. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at enginepro.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing of racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat out foot on the floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Friday Night Thunder returns to Oswego Speedway for the 2013 season, featuring the Corpac Sprint Car Series, Thunderstocks, Mini Stocks, and Bombers every Friday night. For more information, call 888-720-7223 or visit OswegoSpeedway.com for more information.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at enginepro.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing of racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. And my next guest has been a standout on the Central Pennsylvania circuit for years. He's an employee at DMI Race Products, veteran race car driver Dave Ely. And Dave, it's great to have you on. I've wanted to have you on the show for a while, and I'm glad we could make this connection.
Oh, yeah, no problem, bud. You know, really glad to be on, and anytime, I'm more than willing. So I really enjoy doing this type of thing, and look forward to it.
Well, first of all, let's talk about what you're up to for this coming season. You've done a variety of different things over the years, from Central Pennsylvania 410s, doing 360s, midgets, all kinds of different stuff. So what is, you know, you're at the race shop tonight building wings, so you're doing something. What are your plans for this coming season?
We're actually going to focus on a lot of 410 sprint car racing this year between, say, probably the Central Pennsylvania scene, All-Stars, Outlaws, et cetera. We'd kind of backed away from that a little bit because it was difficult for me to put in a lot of races with the business, with DMI and that sort of thing. We're always so busy doing other things, and my wife and I have four kids. But this past year, we did a lot of traveling, ran a lot of 360 races, and it just, you know, that in itself takes up a bunch of time with traveling and the cost of travel today. We really just sat back and looked at it and said that for what it costs us to travel to a lot of the races, we could really run a little bit more around home for much better money. And also at the same time, I have three girls and one boy. My boy turned 11 and he wanted to start racing go-karts, so we usually do that on a Sunday. And getting home real late Saturday nights and that sort of thing from traveling, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 hours away at a race gets kind of old to get up early Sunday morning and then go race. So it's a lot better really just racing more, you know, closer to home.
And we see a lot of change on the Central Pennsylvania circuit. We've seen some guys are cutting back their schedule. And I've noticed that we see some new teams coming into the mix and see team drivers like you maybe coming back into the fold a little bit. Is that kind of a byproduct of maybe like some, you know, opportunity, you know, people coming and going being as an opportunity for someone? Or is it just kind of like the natural cycle of things?
I don't know. Probably a little bit of both, really. I mean, because I think everyone views things and does things for different reasons. For me, I always say that's why I never say never. Life changes. You know, what you're able to do this year doesn't fit in your plans for the next year, vice versa. So we've always ran. It don't matter to us. We race against whoever, whenever. You do what you do, and that's all you can do. So we've never really got too concerned with what other people are doing. We just do our thing, and for this, for us, it just made more sense for us to bring our program back closer to home. For some other people, I'm sure there's guys that look at that. I mean, absolutely, I'm sure there is. You know, you kind of see that on the car count scale. You know, it seems like whenever the one thing following the highest car counts is the lowest car counts, and then vice versa. As soon as you start to see car counts start to dwindle, you know, they start to get themselves back up. It's just, a system of checks and balances. But like I said, I guess to answer your question, everyone does stuff for different reasons. I'm sure there's some people that are making a move because of some people going away, and I'm sure there's some people making a move for reasons totally, you know, unaffected or in regards to that. So, yeah, a little bit of everything.
And you've always been a guy that's done stuff a little bit different. You don't go out and get the standard race car, the standard motor, and the standard wing that everybody else is running. You kind of march to the beat of your own drum. So is that going to be a continuation with your team? Are you guys going to be doing some different stuff, or are you going to be going back more to maybe like the standard stuff that we see more teams using?
You know, we'll probably be somewhat standard. It all depends your time and so forth you're able to put in. I guess probably more than anything, I'm a guy that gets bored. So when I get bored, I like to do things different to kind of help keep my interest in stuff. But at this level and as things go along, it's very difficult to do that and not be either A full-time racer, you know, or B, have a really, really deep pocketbook that you're able to do some tests in or put time in. I mean, so you have to kind of back up a little bit And I think you see a lot of that similar to what happens in the rest of racing. I mean, you see multi-car teams do well, that sort of thing. You sometimes need to kind of be buddied up. You know, I'm fortunate. I deal with so many good racers through DMI that a question and answer is only a phone call away from me. You know, I'm lucky. I have a lot of people that are always willing to help me and stuff. So we're going to be on somewhat a basic program. We'll have a Maxim car, which is pretty vanilla. We do our own shocks. My dad is a pro shock rebuilder, has been for many, many years, and does his own thing. So we definitely do our own shocks, which is obviously a critical component of it. We're going to use Ryder Racing engines. That's actually one of the things I'm stepping back from a little bit. In the past, we didn't ever really build totally our own engines, but we always had our hands in them and maybe gathered parts and did our own dyno work and that sort of thing. I am backing off of that. I think in order to race good with the amount of time we have, you just can't do everything. So we're going to put all that into the hands of Thomas at Ryder. And, you know, we do a lot of stuff on our own, building components, front axles, wings. Like you said earlier, we were building nose wings tonight, that sort of thing. So I guess a little bit of both worlds. There's been years we've done absolutely everything and totally beat to our own drum. And then, you know, there's years we've been more standard. This coming year, we'll do a little of this, a little of that.
Now, with your day job at DMI, you have a pretty good pulse on what's going on with the sprint car world. I know with a lot of businesses I deal with my day job day to day, it seems like the economy's making a little bit of a rebound. How are we doing in the racing world? Are we starting to see the sprint car racing after the dip in the economy starting to rebound a little bit? Is it more holding strong? Where are you seeing growth or shrinking-wise with sprint cars right now?
You know, the racing business is a crazy business. We've never seen it really get hit the way most other things were hit. So was there years that were a little softer than other years? Well, yeah, I mean, definitely over the last 5-6 years, there were years that it was down a hair, but what it was down was so little that it really was almost statistically irrelevant. And vice versa, there were years through that period it was up and it really was statistically irrelevant. So racing has held strong throughout. We deal with, you know, sprint cars, late models, that sort of thing. I'm going to say in dirt track racing, we deal with probably the 3 or 4, what you would say, maybe top tier classes. So they were somewhat way less affected than the lower guys, you know, the guys that were struggling to get a hobby car together or street stock, something like that. You know, they were going to be the guys to lose their money first. Or to suffer. And from a point of view, as far as our people in our type of race, and they're so passionate, it's not really, you know, like a street rod situation or a motorcycle situation or something like that, where maybe you have it for pleasure, but if it has to go, it goes down the road and you don't really think twice about it. I always say, if a guy comes home and he owns a street rod and his wife says, we got to sell it, it goes in the front yard with a for sale sign. If a guy comes home and his wife says, we got to sell the sprint car, he says, really, it'd be cheaper if I just got rid of you. So that's kind of the different mentality that you have between racers and everyone else.
I think you took the cake for the line of the year right there, Dave Ely, joining us here. Dave, one thing I wanted to talk about, you've been a driver for quite a while now. I can't believe we can call you a veteran driver now, but we can. And what is there a venue you haven't raced in yet that you still want to get to before your career is over, someplace you haven't run yet?
You know, not a whole lot. We've been lucky to go a lot of different places. I've driven for the same guy, Gene Frankowiak, for like, I don't even know, going into our 12th or 13th year together. He just kind of lets me go race and do whatever I want to do. So this past year, you know, we ran, I don't even know, I think I ran maybe 24, 25 races this past year. And we ran at, I think, like 21 or something different racetracks. So we've been to a lot of places. We've hit most of them. I've been fortunate, had some success along the way. I'd say the one place I definitely got to get to you know, before I would be done would be Eldora. It's the only, I guess, name racetrack that we haven't ever, I myself personally haven't raced at. We did, you know, naturally the Grove and all the places back here and the Knoxvilles and, you know, whatever kind of fill in the blank type of thing. But for some reason, I don't know why, it just never, nothing just ever came up that made it sensible or feasible or whatever to go to Eldora. So somewhere along the line, we'll have to do that.
That's surprising. Of all the ones I thought you would have punched off on your bucket list, I thought that one would have been one. That's interesting. So Dave Ely joining us on the line. And, you know, with some of the changes we've seen in the Central Pennsylvania circuit, we see Sealance Grove going to 360s over to the 358s. Is this kind of the hallmark of maybe the 358 division's final straw? Maybe you think that's going to go away? Or do you think the Grove and Lincoln can keep that class going?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough to tell. There's a lot going on in sprint car racing right now. I mean, obviously the Race Saver deal, which, you know, some people call 305s. I mean, there is a difference. There's Race Savers and there's 305s, and the Race Saver thing is what's really growing and going around the country. The 360 thing, it's kind of got itself a little in a bit of a gray area or something right now. I'm not sure what would be the right word, but it's slid itself to a point that it's almost there where 410s cost. Your drive lines and that sort of thing certainly go through a lot more with a 410 than a 360. There's absolutely no denying that. But the whole rest of it, I mean, the car you're initially building, putting the new tires on every night, how long you're running your engines, that sort of thing, kind of become a little blurry between a 360 and a 410. There ain't a whole heck of a lot of difference. So 410s are strong where they're strong. In Pennsylvania, I've always said fans could watch the worst ever rubber down 410 race and be leaving high-fiving, talking about the greatest. It was the greatest thing they ever seen. You could have the ASCS 360s in town with every top guy in the country in them, racing four wide, come across the finish line, four of them in a dead heat, and the Central Pennsylvania fans would, the three of them that actually went to the race would be bitching about it, going, boy, that was terrible. That sure wasn't nothing like a 410 race. So I think each pocket in the country kind of has its own strengths and weaknesses, and you know, the focus in Pennsylvania is 410 sprint cars, always has been. And that's somewhat why the 358s, in my opinion, suffered. Any support division to the 410s is going to kind of not get the attention it deserves, or maybe the attention it requires. Like the 358 deal required that the racetracks police the rules and so forth. And they didn't do that. So the 358 class got out of hand, and all the cars went away. So now, well, we'll just start allowing 360s. Well, same thing. 360 rules, in order to be effective, need to be policed. If they don't police the 360 rules, it'll fall by the same fate as the 358.
Dave Ely sharing some wisdom with us, and that's the kind of answer I expected out of the man, one of the brighter guys in the sport. Well, Dave, I'm real excited to hear that you're going to be back on the 410 circuit, and who knows, maybe sooner or later you can come out this way, cross off Eldora off the bucket list, and cross paths, or maybe I can venture out there this year, hopefully, and run into you somewhere.
Yeah, not a problem. Would love that. Like I said, we definitely gotta get out there somewhere along the line, and you know, see what happens. So never know what holds in store. I'm one of them guys that 2 days before I'm supposed to be somewhere could look and go, oh, that looks interesting out there. Let's go that. Let's change and go over there. So I'm kind of a, you know, kind of whimsical on that sort of thing.
Well, Dave, happy holidays. Have a great Christmas, and look forward to seeing you down the road when the season starts.
Yep, and thank you for having me on. I did just want to get a little shameless plug in there. We do a driving and chassis school every year. I've had a lot of people from the Wisconsin area, all over the world for that matter, come and attend. This year, myself and Lee Stauffer, who is Greg Hodnett's mechanic and crew chief, are going to be putting it on. It's Saturday, January 25th, and it's very, very economical. We serve you lunch. We spend a lot of time with you. We do question and answer. For more information on it, you can go to our website, beabetterracer.com, and we'd love to see some people out there for that.
And, you know, I'm glad you got to that, because that was on my question list, and we just got to talk about racing I forgot about for a second, so my bad.
Yeah, that's all right.
but what if I'm a racer that's going to attend that, what am I going to get out of that? If I go to this 3-hour seminar with Lee, what kind of, do you cover the whole thing? Do you take individual questions? Let's say I'm getting ready to start out. Maybe I've been in the car for a year. What am I going to get out of it?
Well, we actually start from the very beginning. We'll start by, hey, I want to get a race car. How do I do it? Tell you kind of what to look for, what not to look for. Make sure you buy the right thing to start with. Get yourself surrounded by some decent people. Assembling the car, proper way to assemble the car, proper way to get the parts, proper pieces to purchase. Right up to going to that racetrack the first day, a setup you should look to have, racetrack adjustments, things as a driver you should be relaying to people, etc. And then, you know, down to, okay, we left the track for the night, what do we take with us as far as what did we learn, how do we keep record of that, knowing maybe there's a night you run seventh and you really were pretty good, you know, don't hang your head over that. As in turn, hey, there's been plenty of nights we've been fortunate enough to run off the front row with a horrible race car and win. You know, you can't go home that night thinking I got this all figured out. You got to be honest with yourself. Then how to maintenance the car, et cetera. Even a little bit, you know, sponsorship stuff, some driving things to look for, ways to formulate game plans, that sort of stuff. And that generally, that takes place all in the morning. That gets us to lunch, and then we come back after lunch and we'll do, you know, an upwards of 3 hours or more of question and answer with the attendees, asking both of us or one of us, whatever questions they have, whether it be, you know, when the track starts to go this way, what do I do? When do I do this? When do I do that? What do you look for? Explain to us in shock graphs. Whatever it may so happen to be, we try to let people know that by the time they leave there that day, every question they ever had, we answer to the best of our ability. You know, we're kind of lucky. Lee's pretty open on stuff. Stauffer, and I'm extremely open. I've raced so long that I know, you know, I can't always tell you what's going to work. I can kind of tell you what's not going to work. And I can also tell you that, you know, we can look and look at each person and try to tailor to them. Because maybe what I do, you know, just because something works for me and the way I drive, I'm able to sit back and say, well, that might not be what Hodnett needs or something like that. But I've also watched Greg enough and know different guys like him and everything to know what does work for them. So we try to let, you know, at least get everyone tailored. And if you attend our school, it doesn't end the day you leave. I mean, it really doesn't. I'm available on my cell phone all the time. Over the years, I've been very fortunate. Some of the top racers out there that have taken my call when I've had questions and spent the time with me, they didn't have to, that I'm always willing to do that for others. I mean, that's the only way you get better.
And plus, if you get someone going better, they might not tear up your race car at some point if they're completely lost.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd sooner have a guy pointed in the right direction, having fun in the sport, not getting frustrated, not crashing people, you know, enjoying it, getting better at it. And, you know, like I said, really, at the end of the day, I'm confident in my abilities that, you know, I'm going to still compete with them. So there isn't one thing I'm going to tell them that's gonna bite me so bad that I'm not going to be able to race, you know. So, I mean, yeah, you just kind of got to be comfortable with yourself to do that, I guess. But truly, it's all about helping people and trying to get them pointed.
And that's at beabetterracer.com, or you can call him at 484-794-2993. Well, Dave, like I said, I knew this was going to be good. We're going to have you on again later in the year. Hopefully it's after you win something, though, so we can go talk about that.
Yeah, sure, it would be nice. So, and, you know, we'll certainly do our best to make that happen.
And, well, Dave, I really appreciate it. And thanks for reminding me, because that's the whole point of this thing, was to get people into the seminar, but also to talk some racing. I guess I just got a little carried away. But thanks for being on. Like I said, have a great holiday season. Enjoy it with the family. And look forward to seeing how your seminar turns out.
Yeah, like I said, I appreciate it. Thank you for having us on. no big deal. I'm the same way. You get talking about racing, you get all kind of excited and ready to go, especially it's been a little bit here since we got to see some cars go on the track. So, you know, you really start to get itchy at this point. But hope everyone has a great holiday, and again, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks. And that is going to wrap up this edition of TJ Slideways Live. I want to thank Tony Barhorst and Dave Ely for being on. Have a great holiday. We'll be back next Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to this edition of TJ Slideways Live.